Hi, du wunderst dich vielleicht gleich im Anschluss, wenn wir auf Englisch weiterreden. Deswegen schon mal hier der Heads up. Die heutige Folge wird auf Englisch gehalten.
Okay, we have those resources. What do we do? How do we go from here to actually a cloud? That looks like people go on Google Cloud, they click, they got the service.
ITCS, Pizza Time Podcast. Cheesy questions and juicy answers for the tech community.
Hi and welcome back to today's episode of the ITCS Pizza Time Tech Podcast. I'm glad to have Red Boomgar back again here in the studio in Frankfurt. He is the founder and CEO of Parameter AI, and he was here already a year before in 2024. And I'm happy to see you here again. Before we start and talk a bit about today's topic, just introduce yourself to those who haven't listened to the first episode or don't know you.
Thank you, guys. I'm always happy to be here. I could say always. This is the second time. So my name is Red Boomgar. I'm actually a European institution troublemaker with my own startup. So I worked at the European Space Agency as a data scientist. I worked a bit at NASA for a short while, just on an AI accelerator. And I worked at the European Central Bank. And that's where I actually lived my life to actually get motivated to do what we do today. Yeah, I'll tell you later, I guess.
Sure, we will head back to that. Maybe comparison to last year, has your favorite pizza changed?
I guess it did. Recently, yeah, actually. You know? I went to Sachsenhausen. There's a super nice restaurant in Frankfurt, which is very small. You know, so you don't bring five friends there, maybe three, four max.
What's it called?
And I don't remember. It's Pizza Mystery, a mystery of pizza.
Okay, I'm not that familiar. I just wanted to know so I can try it out.
Yeah, it sounds like that, mystery pizza. And there's a pizza on the menu. The first one is called the Fancy Pizza. Mamma mia, this is good. You have everything on it.
Everything.
Yeah, everything you would like, I guess. Oh, at least for me. I mean, mushrooms, you have salad, you have two kinds of salad, a bit of spinach, gota, and you have this burrata in the middle, which you can spread.
Sounds quite good.
Yeah.
Sounds quite good.
It's delicious.
Perfect. Because last year, if I remember correctly, you were more into quattro formaggi.
Yeah, this kind of things, like classical.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. It's always good, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start right into the episode. As I said, you were here a year ago. So what has changed since then with Parameter AI? And what were your biggest achievements since then?
So we are slowly growing. So I had to take the realization of that. So a few months ago, a few months ago, I was like, okay, what's happening? Like, who is working for or with Parameter? So I just made a big graph with the different topics we have. And I realized we're 16 people now. So
16?
Yeah, 16. Nice. 16 people, mostly contributors, what I call contributors. One big half of our project is actually fully open source. And the other part is half open source. So it's not really like what people in open source hardcore communities would call open source. So we have an open source client, so people can audit what they're doing, but they're using our API, which is a private API. But this is always nice because people can, you know, work around open source. So 16 people working on the things that we do. That's really good.
How many were you last year around?
Five. Yeah, okay.
That's some kind of growth. Yeah, we actually stay around the 10 people mark a bit more now. So I believe we are 13 at the moment.
Oh, nice.
But slowly but steady.
Very good.
Cool. So what would you say was your greatest accomplishment?
So, good point. I guess there are two of them. Okay. So SpaceDAO, which I was talking last year, which is decentralized space traffic management. And space, I mean in space, satellites and everything.
Yeah.
The achievement in that project is that we got a slot on the Google Summer of Code. Mm-hmm. So we had Google providing stipend to one of the students we were mentoring in that project.
Cool.
So we didn't get the money, but the student got the money. So that's the good thing. It's actually
enabled the student.
Yeah, right. It's a young professional. And which I love is that, and you will see that mostly with Parameter people, they all made changes in their lives. Mm-hmm. This guy is called Antoine. You would see it on the web. You see his contributions. They are amazing. He was a former pharmacist. Mm. That's a good thing. After COVID, he gave up. I was like, I need to go back to something, you know, more concrete. And he chose computers.
Something more fulfilling.
Yeah, certainly. I don't know. That's a topic we have to discuss with him. But nevertheless, he was interested in blockchain. He was developing blockchain algorithms and smart contracts. And there we go. So we discovered each other. And then now we can't leave each other. So that's good. Yeah. One accomplishment is that this Google Summer of Code actually pushed the code further. So we have more to share and to show to our users, which are coming soon. And the other achievements that we actually rolled out are on cloud, mm-hmm. which is called Celestical. Celestial for the stars and ical for analytical.
Yeah, at first I actually overlooked the second C because I thought you would call it Celestial due to your space background.
I see, yeah.
And then our nice guy here.
Who reads all the letters.
Exactly. He told me it's called Celestical. And I was, oh, right. Yeah, you're right.
But that's a good, you know, like, you always like try to choose a product name which is easy. Actually, if it's complicated, it's more fun. You know, like you make people have a little story of how they discovered it's actually
Celestial. Yeah, I mean, one might think that ITCS is easy enough, but more than often enough, we see people always miss spelling it or also just mispronouncing it.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. We make a game out of it, sort of.
Yeah, certainly there's people who say ITX.
No, we haven't had that yet.
TIX.
Mostly ITCS, which is correct, and then ICTS.
ICTS, which sounds like rhythm, you know, like ICTS. Yeah,
it's a bit more smoother, but IT is missing somehow.
Yeah, I mean, this is the great story. Like, Celestical is not straightforward as the name, but when people know it, then they know it for real because they had this effort of actually they had this effort of actually seeing the letters. So that's the good part. And then this was amazing. So you realize like Parametry.ai is actually an AI company. We were trying to sell, and in a minute we were trying to sell AI for space operators. So space operators, like one very traditional, conventional area, space operations. And AI is the total opposite. It's very hard. So you have to engage everybody in a transformation. We are too small to do those things at the moment. Nevertheless, it's still things we have in the back. And so we are tackling problems that are really now problems. And the cloud is different. It's very horizontal. So meaning that everybody needs the cloud at some point. And so it was much more easier, much more fun to discuss with a lot of users and, you know, engage them. And then we have users.
It has a direct impact on many people.
Exactly. On many devs, you know, like and devs are people we usually like to interact with.
Exactly.
Not salespeople from other companies.
Yeah, that's exactly what we will talk about today.
Okay.
Exactly. So you mentioned that last year we spoke about Space DAO and decentralized governance and that you launched Celestical, mm-hmm. your own cloud. So how does these two parts fit together?
Space DAO is the web service in the end. Although it's a decentralized web service, you always need something to be deployed. But I mean, I guess the part that fits with the cloud is that Parametry is anyway working for different companies where we have to deploy. Deploy and deploy again and deploy. And people are like, can we deploy on a private server or private cloud, those kind of things, like, yeah, no problem. This is actually what we know how to do. So we were born for that. So we had servers for more than, for more than 10 years, which actually passed to Parametry, the company. And I was like, this is resources. Why don't we use them? And there we go. We were like, okay, let's try. We thought we had round tables of, okay, we have those resources. What do we do? How do we go from here to actually a cloud that looks like people go on Google Cloud, they click, they got the service. Almost. The UX is not there. But anyway, we needed to deploy for our own clients. So we had our own cloud. And then from there, we automated and did our own cloud, Celestical.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm also interested in the later on topics where we will talk about some specifics of your cloud service or your cloud system. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and not all the secrets, of course, but yeah.
Sure. I mean, some of them you have to keep. Okay, so what inspired you except your just having resources to go into cloud business?
Yeah, right. So I guess I always loved it first, you know, like I'm a kind of computer geek, you know, like when people tell me I have an issue with my computer, it's like I feel the challenge, like show me. Even if it's Windows and I don't know Windows, I just click on buttons, it works. Or sometimes I get closer to the computer and there's kind of this aura and then the computers get scared and, you know, they react and they solve the problem by themselves. It's the funny stories of IT support, I guess. Nevertheless, I had the chance. I mean, I'm super grateful to have the chance to work at the European Space Agency. And when you're there, you have this feeling, at least for me, you know, like a feeling of European duty. So I'm working for space, but I'm working for the citizens of Europe, you know, like pushing the boundaries of science or helping that happen.
Sure.
So in a way, I was thinking, okay, where do we deploy things that we deploy for the users of Europe and things like that? So kind of pushing that kind of duty for Europe to sovereignty of Europe, and bit by bit, you know, realized that it wasn't all there. ESA is actually made of a lot of engineers, so they have their own cloud, which is super nice. But they still like scale up on external clouds, which could be avoided if we had the European actors. So the first, like, this kind of seed in my head was like, okay, why don't I be that actor? That's the thing. Yet, you know, I had some startup experiences and I didn't want to start from scratch. From scratch meaning without customers. Mm-hmm. So ESA could be a good customer. And actually today it is, indirectly. Oh, nice. That's a good thing, yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you, man. And then I worked at the European Central Bank for another 3 years. And this was actually a big revelation that, all right, it's not an option. We need this European cloud, because then you have things like all your payments at the supermarkets are going through something which is actually hosted somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So this information is like super critical economically. And I guess it has to be tackled. So it has to really stay on the sovereign ground somehow, so that we actually build independence with everybody and therefore dependence. So that we have incentives to discuss and stay in peace.
Sure. We will see how you fit into the global market here. And if we speak of cloud, normally one thinks of the big players like AWS from Amazon, Google Cloud, Azure, and also those Chinese big companies. How do you fit? And firstly, how do you compete also with such huge companies?
Yeah, they're big, they're installed. So the advantage they have is that they have an outreach, which is amazing. You know, sure. They say something and then everybody thinks they created it. Like network time protocol, NTP, you know, that's something you can request servers the exact time at the microseconds. Mm-hmm. And AWS is selling that. Well, it's totally free on the internet, but they're selling something called time sync. And I guess if you discuss with the technical people in AWS, they don't even know this is there. So that's another issue with those big players, that they have like more than 200 services and they overlap each other. So as a new user, it's impossible to exactly know what you have to do. You have to go through...
You're just overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Yeah. So you have to go through trainings. They're actually selling certificates, which is biasing the whole job market. So I guess my core way of competing with that is actually reestablishing the narrative. So meaning saying, what is to be cloud native? Cloud native is not speaking the AWS language. It's not talking the Google language or Microsoft Azure language. It's actually talking the container Linux language. It's totally different. It's more fundamental. It's related, but so whenever they do those certifications, you have the container training and then you have the how to click on my interface. So that was funny, like a year ago where I was prospecting who I could recruit in that domain. So I was going through cloud architects. Please don't hate me, cloud architects. There are plenty of good ones. But the big discovery I made is that they were not system administrators, which I was looking for. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was too naive that cloud architects, somebody who can build the cloud, you know, an architect builds. But actually, that didn't happen. So they don't know how to, you know, connect servers together, make them, you know, work together so that they can host services. Mm-hmm. They know how to deploy services, but not host and make the host work. So in short, to compete is really like to reestablish that narrative for cloud natives, but also like we have to be daring people. You know? So I took it the blunt way. So meaning that NASA punchline is like dare mighty things, you know, as space engineers, space researchers. So I'm working with space engineers. So that's the other thing. They are not afraid. You know, they're like, okay, we need to do that. Let's do it. So we need to be competitive there. Let's do it. And that's really like comforting that people are just moving on like this. Yeah.
Cool. Secondly, who are other European competitors? I mean, it's been some years now and there are some European competitors, right?
Yeah, definitely. So it's not that clear picture, because some of the early European players are actually were some of the best in infrastructure, cloud infrastructure. So you have OVH, which is actually made by Octave Klaba. So this guy lives in France, he's French, and actually built data centers in the world, which were the biggest in Canada, for instance, at the time. That were years 2010s, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they started to recently continue that, but move to also something else, another field, which is actually web services. So how do you, you know, in your verticals actually provide services which are high level? People can just click actually and just click and have something on the web. And so they went from infrastructure provider to service providers, but keeping the both together. And I guess this is very complicated. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you have Scaleways in France that is doing that. Etzner, I guess they're exploring that part. But then you have Ionos, okay. At this moment, then you have a kind of a change of narratives. While the first ones I talked about, they say web services, like the big US players, those ones, they start to call themselves web hosting, web hoster. It sounds so 90s, you know, to me. Sure. But that's very relevant to what people are looking for. You know, I need web hosting. I need a website, so it's web hosting. That makes sense. But people deploy containers now, so it's not really like they make an application, a web app. Mm-hmm. So that's funny to see that happening. So that's, in a nutshell, the biggest competitors. But also partners, you know, if I talk about OVH, Scaleway, Netzner.
What do you think of, like, for example, Stackit from Schwarz Group?
Oh, yeah. They actually tried to recruit our staff.
they tried to fish.
Yeah, right. So because we have also a narrative of having cheap cloud. But, you know, it's not cheap. It's just like cost effective. Mm-hmm. Because cheap has this kind of way of thinking that your service might not work. Like Ionos. Sure. Sorry, I'm trolling. So Ionos is behind Stratos, and I see a lot of people having a web WordPress in Stratos. It doesn't work. I'm sorry, but it's too slow. I'm trolling. Can I troll?
Sure. We will see if we will cut it out.
Yeah, this is fun. And then it's my responsibility to get better than them. But nevertheless, so Schwarz IT, which is behind Lidl in the end, so they want to play that kind of... billig, and you say cheap, affordable, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I haven't seen too much of what they've been working on.
Okay.
But I guess they know we exist.
Sure. I mean, it'll be interesting to see once you get into the realm of finishing your product and getting everything out. And
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So on a global perspective, how do all of those companies compare to you? What are the differences? What makes you distinct or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so of course there's a lot of resemblance, and we have to play resemblance because people are more likely to use something they already know about, you know, like they're already familiar with. But I guess what's being lost in the equation is being human. That's the thing. So being cloud native is... And learning that is actually interacting with human beings, not just videos, recorded videos. So we want to be a bit more human. So we really want to drive this community-based approach where we are talking with devs. Our devs are talking with other devs. We don't have sales people right now, you know, like, and the more salesy guy we have is actually a space engineer. So you can imagine. He's actually a wonderful, emotional guy, I would say. So this is really like the key to it. And of course, the rest is classical arguments, I would say. So we are a European company with European partners. I'm very strict with that. So everybody's understanding that. So whenever we look at a service we could use or something external, even if it's just for our backend, it has to be European. Mm-hmm. So there is nothing that goes anywhere. That's the magic. And we even look at our European partners if they're not using also, you know, a US cloud or anything external to Europe, because this is very important for us. GDPR is just reinforced year to year, and I guess we're about to get a third wave of changes in GDPR. So we're here. We're ready.
Nice.
On that part.
So you mentioned some of those key aspects and those differences. Could you maybe go into a bit more detail and give some more examples?
Oh, yeah.
For example, what are the key differences between European and American marketing styles? You said you had one sales guy that is more like a space engineer.
Yeah, right.
Probably that's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. When you look at it on LinkedIn or other platforms, Reddit, Stack Overflow, especially LinkedIn, I would say, you see AWS podcast, Google Cloud, YouTube videos.
Hundreds of podcasts about cloud.
Yeah, exactly. But if you search for Scaleway or OVH, maybe you'll find them. But the thing is that they're not as visible.
Sure.
Yeah. So there might be a bias because those platforms are American. So you want to, as an American platform, maybe, you know, you have the incentives to push the American market. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's kind of the conspiracy part of it. But, you know, it always ends up very true. And the thing is that they are mostly different in styles in marketing. So there's this very open way of sharing information, of having a podcast which is live, so you don't control the narratives of whoever's going to contribute. While in European space, there's much more care about what is going to be the narrative, who's going to speak, what are you going to say exactly, and those kind of things. So it's a bit more like strict, and people can feel it. So, and I guess we have to stop this in a way.
So you want to make it a bit more easy, more approachable.
So I'm an open source advocate. So I never used Windows, for instance. So you never see a Windows computer at home. That's as strict as that. And the thing is that there's a style, you know, like it's a style of living with, you know, the e-world, the electronic world somehow.
Yeah, sure.
So whenever I do a podcast or something, like everybody's free to speak. You know, and when I say that to others, event organizers online, which are more in traditional companies, they're like, are you crazy? You know, people are going to just take the microphone. People don't do that. Yeah. If you give them the ground, they are very respectful. You give the rules in the beginning, you raise your hand, you get the voice, no problem. There is no problem. And even if people have like conflicting arguments, that's actually perfect. This is, you know, like feeding the discussion.
It makes it more interesting, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Okay, so you mentioned you want to be more community-driven, more from devs to devs. You want to be maybe also dev-focused.
Mm.
How could that approach just benefit the ecosystem?
So people who build web services in the end are developers. So I listened to another podcast, not just Pizza Time.
Which podcast? You can share it.
Yeah, it's YC Combinator. I mean, I don't listen to everything, but there was one about, you know, dev tools.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that, you know, if devs are building the cloud services, then we are a dev tool. We help them going online. So we are trying to embrace that. So community-based is actually not an option. So we are starting to go to Reddit, trying to feel the vibe, Stack Overflow. We have actually the Docker community on Element Matrix, where we are answering questions every day, just helping people bluntly about their container issues. That's it. We're not selling Celestical. We're just like helping them. That's it. My name there is not even saying Celestical, so you see. That's the thing. So it's just about getting to be known and those kind of things. And one of the best examples I have, and I guess which Scaleway embraced a little, is the people in IT support in Scaleway. So they had the service called Dedibox, a dedicated box, dedicated servers. And you have this guy called Antoine, who was answering all the tickets, fixing all the tickets mostly. You have two or three guys like answering 30,000 tickets very certainly.
Crazy.
And then they started to have a Twitter account, which was super nice. Like say, I'm here, I'm sleeping. servers are up, services are green, or whatever. So kind of the news. And this was very human. Like you could talk to
the
IT.
Yeah, they are just engaging with the community. Yeah, that's cool.
You could submit the ticket and then on Twitter say, hey, Antoine, like, can you have a look? Like, I sent you something. It's like, yeah, I will do. That was super, you know, convenient, but also like very comforting as a user.
Sure.
And I want people who use Celestica to feel the same way. So it's like, I've been there. I've been in your shoes. I know what this is.
I don't have to do this and that certificate in order to understand everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There is a big other thing which interests devs is the performance argument, you know, which is less like an issue with mid managers or things like that. So because we build that with space engineers, we used to do AI on satellites and we're like bringing that AI on the ground. So that we're actually 3 times to 10 times more performant. This has a huge effect. So the thing is that we're not just another cloud, we're also trying to be more sustainable. So if we can use less servers to have more performant output, then we actually use less metals, less rare metals, less plastic, everything that we need to build a cloud.
That's nice to hear.
A data center.
I guess that's one key difference that really pushes you to a special point, I guess.
I guess too, yeah. It's like, and I discovered another world, the green software world. There's a Bundesverband in Germany, green software.
Exactly.
You have companies working together in a quite open way, actually. That's super nice. They actually realize that whatever device you're running, if your software is it's going to consume a lot. So the software is actually the key. So if you know you can make loops, you have to compute things. I always remember this little story where there's this guy from the Space Debris Office in the European Space Agency that comes to see me because we were doing a lot of data science. He said, okay, we are like computing all the interactions of Earth orbit with asteroids orbits. So we can see, they were in planetary difference, you know. We can see which asteroid comes in, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what we're doing. That's the data we have, et cetera. And he says, it takes 1.5 hours. It's like, what? So I looked at the code. There was a loop, which was crazy, you know, looping over looping again. I was like, okay, you can do it differently.
Yeah.
I removed 10 lines. I did 3 lines. And then it took 5 minutes to compute. I was like, what's happening?
Yeah, code efficiency helps a lot. That's sure.
And so if you imagine that at the cloud scale, you, them, everybody is doing like the same thing. And then you have like 1 hour there, 1 hour there. You have thousands of hours, millions of hours that are used for nothing just because the code is not optimized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. That's really, really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Can you provide an everyday analogy to explain the importance of a European sovereignty in cloud computing?
I guess earlier I talked about, Visa, MasterCard, the payments. Everybody knows that, everybody knows that what it is to pay at the store. So you give your card and what's happening is that there's a transaction which is recorded by Visa. So Visa knows actually the inflation of the kilo of banana in Germany, in Poland, everywhere. Yeah. So that's the crazy part because they have all this information.
I recently just saw these statistics. I believe MasterCard and Visa own about 80% of the whole market of credit cards.
That's crazy. It's huge, yeah. It's huge. And so that's what you have at the European Central Bank. They're talking about the digital euro. This is especially to tackle that kind of issue. So sovereignty is not just hosting everything here, but it's hosting the intelligence. So because if you give your intelligence to anyone else, then they can control your whole area externally. So your economic area externally.
And you become dependent on them, sort of.
Without knowing. That's the crazy part. Yeah. You will never know.
I mean, back then also, I believe the Wirecard scandal was a big part also where this transaction service hosting company just collapsed and no payments were actually possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, when I was at the European Central Bank, I guess it went public, so I guess I can say it, but there was a big transaction market failure. So just a web service failure hosted in a US cloud. I won't name the name. And it fell. So meaning that, okay, it fell. Maybe that was a software issue. I don't know, exactly. In the end, it could be that US cloud that just says, okay, let's reduce the pipes, the network pipes. So you have less transactions per second. So what's happening in Europe, then there's a cascade of consequences. Banks that can't exchange money between each other, so they can't settle your payments. So that's hopefully there are so many intermediaries that the intermediaries actually take the hit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they make you pay later.
Short fallback onto the AI part.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of the AI in your systems?
Yeah. Oh, so we use AI. That's one thing. And we provide computing facilities so people can do their own AI. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there are two different things. So we use AI on our side. So for orchestration purposes. So the big vision is that at some point, we know what you're running as a service. We actually understand your traffic, but not the details of the traffic. We're not inspecting your traffic. We're just knowing that, on Mondays at noon, you have a lot of users. So we can orchestrate your service to be, scaled at the right pace. And that's done with an AI agent that actually understands what's happening, where to put you.
Forecasting, etc.
Exactly. And this agent is actually connected to how much resources you're actually using, consuming in terms of energy. And what the cluster of computing nodes do we have? It could be better used so that we have less computer heat from the processors, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a bit more like the intelligent AI that can actually manage infrastructure from the services to the users, conserving performances, but also reducing consumption and energy losses. Exactly. But also the impact on the local environment. Some data centers use water, so you don't want to heat the water too much.
Yeah, I mean, even I don't know how long ago, but I believe several years ago, there was a big headline that Microsoft first put their servers into the ocean. Back in Iceland, I believe.
Awful, yeah. In the coldest place. And let's warm it up. This is crazy, yeah? So knowing that global warming is coming mostly from the oceans, so it's just verrückt, as we say in German.
Okay, nice. So let's come to the last big topic of our discussion today. How can European clouds position themselves as disruptive forces? How do you try to be disruptive, as you said earlier?
Yeah, right. So I guess it's a realization. So we just started with our users. The most disruptive things is just being there. You have this support. I guess the support is key, and the community. I guess that's the most disruptive part of it. Of course, our technology. So being performant is actually disrupting in many facets. So for the users, it's faster. For us, it's less resources consumed. For everybody, it's nature conserved. And when I mean it, in the sense that nature, humans are part of nature. Sure. So because the Earth doesn't care about us, if we mess it up, it's just going to reboot in millions of years. And we're just going to be not there. So yeah, that's for us, that's the most disruptive impact we can make. If you think about the 15 to 25 years old right now. I just made a little statistics. How much they use Pinterest and Instagram, for instance, I guess together, or just Instagram. And I see them, you know, uploading a video where they walk in the street. Hello, this is me. I'm walking in the street. They're not even talking, actually. And then, boom, they send the video. So it's like megabytes. Megabytes there, and then at the end, gigabytes and then terabytes. So I tried to make the calculation over the population just in Germany, 15-year-old to 25. It's actually, if you had to translate every byte into a character on a book, so one byte is a letter in a book, okay? Then you had to build a skyscraper, you know, as big as the crayon here, mm-hmm. with books, just built of books, you know, till the, every day.
Every day?
Yeah.
In Germany?
Just in Germany.
And just the 15 to 25 people.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy. Yeah, I mean, I'm not that shocked, honestly, because I see it myself and also just my friends, etc., how much we use those platforms every day.
Yeah.
But actually, to put those into perspective, that's crazy.
Yeah. And you don't feel responsible, really, of what's happening in the back. You know, those books.
Nobody thinks of that.
Yeah, it's electronic. Electronics, you know, I was in Silicon Valley 2018. We had a dinner and on the table there was the director of AI of Google and had this little quiz here. Guess how much weight do we bring to the Google Cloud every day? I guess at that point, Instagram was still hosted by Google Cloud. Could you guess like how much weight do they bring in terms of servers, racks, plastic to hold everything?
How much weight?
Yeah.
Every day?
Every day. How much can you lift?
I don't know. I suppose several hundred kilos or tons, probably.
Several hundred kilos or tons, you know, like a few tons. Yeah, it was 18 tons.
18 tons.
In 2018. Okay. But it's just scaling up. So today it's even more. So that's two big trucks. Okay. So, and I just, you know, whenever I present this, I just make, okay, let's imagine half of it is metal. Okay. And when you think about mining metal, when you go to a mine, you realize that they have to move 100 tons of rocks to get 2 tons of metal. Okay. 2%. So that means that in order to get those 10%, they have to move 500 tons of rocks every day. Yeah. Every day. Okay. It's every day across the world. So just that.
That's mind boggling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So think about those 15, 25s, like, if you can grab their phone, say, like, well, why are you taking a picture here? Just call your friend. It's actually cheaper. Yeah, audio is nice. I love the podcast.
Nice. Okay, so what does walking on the moon with expert boots? That was a quote from you that you mentioned to me, symbolized for your vision of innovative cloud computing.
Yeah. So meaning that walking on the moon is mostly like there's always a green field or a new way to do things. Okay. With expert boots, you still know how to walk, but then you want to build something that can make you drive faster, fly faster. So I guess for me, this is some sort of metaphor of there are things to do and we know how to do them. And like bringing confidence in people that are in the team that we know how to do that. So we just need to sort it out and make it happen.
And make it visible.
Make it visible. Yeah, right. Make it visible. The challenge.
But you're on a good track, though.
Thank you, Felix. Thank you.
I'm very much looking forward to more of that. Okay. Do you have anything else to conclude to our topics content-wise from you, from Parametry AI?
Yeah. I mean, we are always on the lookout of new staff, I would say. So do not hesitate to reach out to parametry.ai. We're on LinkedIn.
You will find that in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is that we have this kind of Parametry Academy we're trying to set up. We have two students that are getting out of the academy right now, so successfully getting out. And the first alumni is exactly. So the thing we realized, you know, working with students is that they have super nice master studies, very dedicated to data science, AI, etc. But they don't know how to build software. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a big hit, you know, like they don't know how to use Git or work in groups, sharing versions. And some of them know because they have been very curious about it and they explored that and taught themselves somehow. But most of them, they don't know this. So software engineering is something that is actually put in parentheses when it's data science or when it's something else. So the academy is actually putting people in data science on real life projects. So we have real life projects, we have open source projects, which actually leads people to actually work on that and take the knowledge wherever they go after. Hopefully they go with Parametry. But that's a big thing I want to share. Like we're open to exchange, our time, mentoring time to actually you discovering new things and eventually, you know, joining the team. Mm-hmm. So we take 1 month shots of trying that every 3 or 4 months, depending on our activities. But that's the thing, yeah. And also one of the last issues that we have actually launched the German region. So it's a marketing trick to say we have servers in Germany. So you will hear AWS or Google Cloud saying we have the German region. Nevertheless, they are entities under US jurisdiction. So which means that whatever they have in US region, it's managed by US. So meaning that they fall under the Cloud Act and everything. But we are European, so that's the good thing. So we have a German region. So do not hesitate to reach out to celestical.eu and we'll make it happen.
Nice. Okay. Just to come to the closing of this podcast, do you have any favorite podcasts? You mentioned one early on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was promised myself to look at the exact name. It's The Diary of a CEO. You know this one?
No,
it's actually exceptional. It's mostly they're long, you know, like 2 hours to 3 hours. And actually, you know, you start always like the first 10 minutes and then it has your attention. And more than your attention, it got your consideration. So you actually want to watch the full hours. Another one I mentioned earlier is a series for startups, you know, from the YC Combinator. It's actually nice. Mm-hmm. I always like Niels Patel in marketing. Actually, you know, when you're a CEO, your main activity is marketing. So strategies and, you know, tips and tricks to be more visible without too much effort. Mm-hmm. Or too much budget. But those guys are nice. They were kind of the founders of Growth Hacking, which I really like. So that's, I guess, the main three in the current time I'm listening to.
Okay, interesting, time. Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. I will definitely check them out.
Yeah, Diary of a CEO is actually super nice.
Yeah, normally I'm not that into those long podcasts, but somehow I get what you mean, because sometimes they just catch you and then you're into it and just keep on listening.
And you're like, it makes so much sense. And then you can explain your life with what they're saying.
Yeah, there are some podcasts that are very scientific-based that I like to hear, for example, from Andrew Huberman or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
They are always like 2 hours plus mostly. And I don't really consume that frequently or often, but sometimes I'm just that interested in one topic and I just keep on listening.
Yeah. The Diary of a CEO and I guess Huberman, actually, I guess the same generation of podcasters, you know, like... I mean, the neuroscience is fantastic. It touches everybody. Everybody has a brain and you want to know how this works. You know,
yeah, that's, sure.
And this is so much connected to everything. So, and for me, this is also something I listen to because when I have employees, I want to understand why they lost focus. You know, like myself, I want to understand why I lose focus. Yeah. They didn't lose motivation, but they're losing focus. So, and I just realized that just before that, we ate something very sugary. So... then your insulin spikes and then everything.
Yeah.
And then you have the drop.
Everybody knows that. Siesta time.
Yeah, right. So drink water.
Exactly. Cheers.
Cheers.
Perfect. Do you have anything else that you want to say personally or whatever to the audience?
To the audience, I know that, you know, whenever you hear like sovereign European cloud sounds so boring.
Yeah, I guess that's just the part of it.
Yeah, but Celestica is made by space engineers and we're
that
going to make this happen.
Much more interesting.
Yeah, thank you, Felix. Yeah, let's do it.
I love space and I love space tech. And I mean, as maybe some of the listeners know, I am a physics student. So that's something I'm very interested in. So I'm full on your side.
Yeah, very nice. We have early discussions with partners. We have computing infrastructure in space. So anything can happen in the future. So stay tuned.
We will see. Okay. Thank you very much for being here. And I had much fun.
Thank you, Felix. Myself too.
See you maybe next year.
Yeah, I will.
If you listeners have any ideas or suggestions for interview partners or some companies that you're interested in, just reach out to us on our social media platforms and we will take a look at that. See you next time.
ITCS, Pizza Time Podcast.